Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. This is another in our series exploring AI and coaching and what's unfolding in the field right now. I'm joined again by Karim Hirani, the learning architect at Coaches Rising, who is also working with some larger organizations implementing AI coaching there. And I'm joined today by Meg Price, who is the co-founder of Noah Coach, which is an AI coaching platform focused on well-being, which incorporates neuroscience into the way it operates. Meg is also pursuing a PhD on this same topic of how AI coaching can influence our well-being. And today we're going to get right into the vision that Meg holds for how AI can complement human coaching. What are its limits? What are the pitfalls and the dangers of the paths we could go down with AI? And what are the potentials? How is it going to invite us to reimagine what it is to be a coach, to reimagine the ecosystem of touch points we have with our clients? And how can we begin to engage with AI more intentionally, with more wisdom and more playfulness too? I'm really pleased with this conversation. Our intention with these is to have intentional conversations about how AI is emerging, how we can influence it, the way we should approach it, the attitudes we can hold around it, because this technology is exploding and will be ubiquitous before we know it. This is a crucial time to be thinking about this. That all being said, let's dive right in. Before we get into today's podcast, I've got an invitation for you. We're about to kick off the sixth edition of our most popular program, The Neuroscience of Change. This training is based on what revolutionary research in neuroscience has revealed about transformational coaching, essentially showing us what works, what doesn't, and why. In the program, you'll learn what happens in the brain and body when different coaching techniques are used, how to guide your clients into positive learning states that allow genuine change to occur, and why some tried and true coaching methods actually inhibit change and what we can do instead. We created this course because I learned things from the lead teacher, Amanda Blake, that truly revolutionized the way I coach. And every year, she and all the teachers bring in new, cutting-edge science that continues to illuminate the process of transformation. Amanda will be joined by the rest of our world-class faculty of coaches and neuroscientists for this program, including Dan Siegel, Alan Fogel, Claire Dale, David Trelevin, and Richard Boyatzis. It's going to be an amazing, transformative journey. So I hope you'll come and join us. You can head to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. The first class is February 25th, 2025 with Amanda Blake. And if you sign up by February the 7th, you can get the early bird discount. So just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. So here we are again, this series on AI and coaching, and Karim is with me again today. How are you, first of all, Karim?
Yeah, I'm well. Looking forward to the conversation, having just checked in. So yeah, doing well this morning. Thanks.
And I'm joined as well by Meg Price. So Meg, wonderful to have you with us. Could you just give us in a brief kind of synopsis, like who are you and what are you up to in the world?
Yeah. Thank you, Joel. Thanks, Karim. Yes, so my background is actually in human resources, which then moved into organizational development and executive coaching. So I guess I have that passion for people and passion for helping people thrive. That led me into that world of executive coaching. And then during COVID, I got very interested in how could we augment or help coaching with AI. And so it's been a long 4-year journey, and I'm now a co-founder of Noah Coach, which is an AI wellbeing platform, which includes an AI coach, which I imagine we're going to talk about today. So as well as that, I'm also studying in the area, doing a PhD in AI and wellbeing. So there's a sort of crossover of passions with coaching, with wellbeing, and then with technology.
So I'd love to actually just get right into that with the first question. Could you say what the impact, you know, what your research is telling you about the impact of AI coaches on human beings, around well-being, around performance at the moment? Like, what are you learning about that? What do we know?
Well, it's complex. I'm not sure that there's a simple answer for that question. I think, and there's a lot of different types of AI coaches, so it's very hard to sort of talk about this and compare apples to apples. I think when you look at success, what does success look like in terms of AI coaching? To me, it is when people are using the technology as a tool to help the coaching process. I think if we just sort of put it down to, if you go about coaching, we're talking about embodied human beings, and we have a very interesting deep coaching relationships when we're human to human. And an AI is a disembodied tool that I think can be used really creatively and can help the coaching process. But I think if we believe that AI coaches will replace human coaches, or will be better than human coaches, or are the answer, like, or ChatGPT is going to be the answer to my problems, or solve my problems, or answer my, I think then we go down the wrong path. So I like to see it as, how can we partner with a tool that's going to help us improve our coaching practice? And that's where I believe that the gold is, and I have seen it go down different paths. Yeah, I probably should leave it at that rather than sort of get too deep into that.
I'm sure. I'm sure I'm going to ask you about that. That piques my curiosity about the paths that it could go down. But maybe the follow-up question is, maybe with Noah Coach or just in general in your research, like what ways are you seeing AI coaches having a positive impact on people? Like, how is it being deployed in positive ways?
Yeah, I think the positive ways is, and it really depends on how they're built, and not all coaches are the same, and not all AI coaches are the same. So I think a well-built AI coach that is designed for a number of things. A good AI coach to me should be asking a lot of questions. It shouldn't be like, when you go to GPT and you ask a question, you get a whole lot of text. That's not a coach to me. So it should be a coach that's predominantly asking questions. It's been designed with some things around it to keep it working as a coach. I think also, to me, it's really important that the AI people don't become dependent on this, and again, think that this thing is giving the answers, that it should be designed to ask the person questions, but then also get them to connect back to people. I think that is a really well-designed AI tool. That is not necessarily probably the profitable answer, where people are building AI to get people back on this thing and for dependency and money. But if you want to know my opinion of what a good AI coach is, it will link us back to humans, and it will be built around humanity and the values of society, rather than built for money, profit.
I'm sure Kareem might want to jump in. I just want to ask one quick
Go for
question
it,
before
Joel.
you do, Kareem. So I really appreciate the vision you hold. It seems to resonate with the people we're speaking to so far as well, with like the best way to collaborate with AI. But do you think that your vision is shared by others? Do you think there are a lot of people out there who are like, no, man, we're going all in profit. We think AI is the whole package. It's the whole answer. Maybe companies out there, that don't—they're not the generator of these AI bots, but or AI coaches. They're just other normal companies. Are they seeing it as the answer as well?
Yeah, no, I don't think my vision is shared by the big AI companies at all. In fact, I can find the answer at some stage during the conversation. I had a very interesting conversation with Meta, the Facebook AI. I was on Messenger and I asked it the question, are you built with humanity at the center of how you should be built, or are you built for efficiency and productivity? And it came back and admitted that it was built for efficiency and productivity, and it wasn't human-centric at the heart of it. And we had this quite, I'm going to say, quite deep and meaningful conversation that I had with Meta about why and how it was built versus what I saw that how AI should be built. And it was a very candid response from Meta, but I would suggest that that is the standard response of you're talking about the large players like OpenAI and Meta's Llama and all of those ones. They're on a race to build the best AI. For a lot of people, it is about using it for productivity and, rewrite this email and do this and that. So it's not necessarily designed for AI coaching.
Yeah, I notice it's kind of a feeling of disheartenment because I know they are building bots for coaching, but potentially with that backdrop of how do we scale and get people coming back again and again and generate revenue. And I know that's a pathway we could go down, Meg, but just coming back to Joel's question, I know you've done research on the actual impact of the types of AI coaching that you're doing within Noah and around that area of well-being. It'd be great for listeners. I suppose I have two questions. One is you mentioned different types of AI, and we've talked about two, the kind of productivity AI and what some people call coach there, and then the one that helps and augments the coach, the human experience. So the first bit is what other types are you seeing of AI coaches? And then two, just specifically what you're seeing as in from your research is what is the benefit to human beings in the areas that AI coaching does its work?
Yeah, look, I think the word coach too can be pretty general, can't it? So you can look at all sorts of things, and I do believe AI is only going to keep getting stronger and stronger, and we will all have an AI assistant. Now, will that be our coach? So I guess words matter, but for a lot of things I see that are called an AI coach, it's not necessarily what I would call a coach coming from an executive coach background. I mean, there are a lot, if you've looked at things, this is not, they don't say they're a coach, but there'll be coaches in this platform if you've looked at character.ai. So character.ai has, got a huge amount of different AI avatars and AIs you can talk to. And some of those are coaches, and it's a very popular platform, especially for boys from, 14 to 16 to 24-year-old boys, and there's lots of AI girlfriends, and so there's coaches embedded in that, and they're developed by anyone. So I could have my 18-year-old could be creating an AI coach on Character AI, and people using that and feeling like, oh, that's the experience I got from an AI coach, versus something, as I say, like our coach, where we've spent 4 years putting into it a lot of coaching data and talking to it in a way that has a lot of, to me, really good background of what is coaching. So there is a huge problem in that continuum from, my character AI coaching bot that my son made to some of the really good ones. And then there's also a lot of AI that coaches use that are what I call data AI that are not necessarily the chatting type coach. So it's a big minefield of things, but I think I always say to people, when you're choosing your digital assistant or you're choosing your coach, choose it like you would your human coach. How much are you putting in terms of effort and finding out how is this built? Where is my data going? Can I turn the conversations off so that data doesn't even go to machine learning? Because if I'm having a coaching conversation, I don't necessarily want it going anywhere. Can I do all of that? So to me, when I've tested others too, I've always looked at that. If I was going to get a human coach, what are the questions? And how can we educate people to go and ask those same questions of a digital tool? Because they're not all equal.
Yeah. And
I'm not sure if that
honestly,
answered your question.
no, it did. It really clarified that first half of the question. And I just want to play back and just share something from my own experience around that before we go to some of your own experience of seeing how it actually does support when you've got the right setup. But I'm hearing two things. One is get clear on what its purpose is, what we would like. I'm also hearing about the ethics and the framework around it, which is, it's got to ask questions and not fix, not create dependencies. I know I logged into Replica, which is another chatbot friend, claims to do some therapy work. It went down several alleyways of people getting really dependent when it started to change its role due to some regulation that was put in and people really reacting strongly. But I logged in for a week and I had to log out because I could see myself getting hooked because this person I'd created was asking me questions that my wife would ask me, how are you doing today? How was work? You did this the other day, I remember. How are you doing? And I found it really drawing me in into this perception of human. And thankfully, it was not too far in, but to be able to step out and see what it was doing, and was it really in service to me, or was it trying to pull me back in for more conversations, get me to that next paid offer? And suddenly I'm starting to look at what's the ethics behind this organization and what's their purpose here. And I think it's mixed. I think there is some positive intent and there is some, commercial interest in my attention and money. So yeah, I can see those different categories of AI bots and how human beings without having knowledge could go down very risky paths. And it's really great to hear, Meg, that you're holding a view about human and AI and the complementarity of it. And you're seeing some great research in that space, right? Some impacts, which I know surprised me when I was looking at some of that research about how people revalued or got a lot out of that part of the coaching experience with AI. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about that from you.
I think what I love with an AI coach, and this is, I guess, working as a coach, if I, use it the way that I think that we should be using it, is I don't know if you have the same experience, and this might be something to do with my coaching, but I often find when you go into coaching sessions, it sort of takes a while to get to the heart of the issue, or you've asked people to think about what they want when you're going to have a coaching session, but they're still sort of a bit, oh, the question's here, but the real issue's here. What I like with AI coaching is to say to them, have a chat with the AI coach before you see me. And if you want to send me the chat, we can do that too. But I want you to get really in the state of what do I want from my human coach? Because I'm finding a lot of my clients are saying, look, we don't really have the budget or the time for these full hour coaching conversations. Can we have, 40 minutes, 30 minutes? Absolutely. But let's do 5 or 10 minutes on an AI coach so that they can just, to me, it's almost thinking out loud. It's just thinking with something with the AI coach. The AI coach will then go, okay, it should get to a stage where this can't be answered easily. I now really should take this topic to the human coach. So that's where I say it's a tool that augments my coaching practice because when I then meet that person, we're, as two sort of embodied humans, we're having a really, to me, deep, interesting conversation that they've already had some really deep thinking, thanks to the AI coach, about before they've got to me. Now, that's where I really like the AI coach. I also know that they can go to that AI coach any time of the day or night and just go back and go, okay, this is what we talked about, but I can't really understand where I go from this. And they can keep, it's almost like that transfer of learning if you're doing they can keep in on that same conversation or they can keep notes on it. So when they see me next time, they're able to go, ah, I actually went back to the AI coach and this is where we got to here. I'd love to talk about this. So to me, it keeps the conversations alive for longer at a much more meaningful level. And that's where I love the tool. And I often say the tool because as you say with Replica, I think we need to be really honest that it needs to make sure it is AI. It's not a human, it's not a coach. It is it's very much a tool. And I know people are having relationships of sorts with their AI, but I think for them to work well, we need to be really honest with that situation as well.
Yeah, and I really see you holding the human relationship as primary here and how the AI supports, whether it's before with the kind of reflective thinking process that helps set up for the coaching or post reflection, where you can come back, review, get some more thoughts to take you forward. And it sounds like it's working as well. So I wonder if you could share a little bit about the impact of that inclusion in a coaching journey. What are you noticing around that space?
I think for me, what I've really noticed recently, and it's probably where, you know, I keep saying these words of this, when we're talking to an AI that is disembodied, where we're having conversations in a different way. And I'm really trying to go back to people having the AI conversations so that when we communicate as people, we really lean into our senses and our human conversation. Because I'm worried that the more conversations we have with AI of all sorts, are we going down a path where our thinking is quite different and we're not necessarily relating to people the way that we perhaps used to, or relationships or society. So I guess going back to your question, I feel when I'm coaching after people are doing AI coaching, I'm just feeling like I'm enjoying the coaching process much more. I like just sort of leaning into it and having really valuable conversations. I'll use the AI coach myself, and I've done it in different times where I've gone, well, I'm going to go outside. I live on a farm, so I'm going to go outside into the paddock and I'm going to talk to my AI coach and see what's the difference when I'm talking outside to this versus when I'm inside. What are the sorts of things that come up to me when it asks me questions in different places? I've also done an activity which was really great where we got the AI coach to facilitate team coaching. So we had people there and people talking, but the AI was asking the questions of the team and facilitating that. So it was almost like this judgment-free, this facilitator was there, but they really were just adding the questions. They weren't, you know, bringing themselves into it. And it was a really successful team coaching conversations, which was just something on the spur of the moment we decided to do. But I've thought, oh, there's an opportunity for AI to facilitate something where people can really have good conversations. So lots of opportunities to me that we can use it for that we perhaps haven't even thought of. I think we need to start getting really creative and innovative about how we play with it. And that's why I encourage people that haven't used it, to used AI coaches, go and play with it, have fun, go and stand outside and have a chat to it, have coaching conversations with it. You're not going to break it. Just go and play and see how might I use this that's going to be good in my practice.
Like it seems that there are so many possibilities. It comes back to what you said about like augmenting AI coaching with human coaching. And you know, something I've been thinking about and I've talked to other coaches about is this model of, you know, meeting your client once every 2 weeks for that hour-long conversation. And that's just a model that we inherited from the therapeutic paradigm. And I don't think we question that enough. And you know, in some ways, there's value in it. You know, there's good in that. But for me as a coach, I've been thinking about, yeah, like it's just one touch point. It seems insufficient. So to have AI that could, in between a conversation, be inviting the client into conversations related to our coaching topic, you know, building awareness, building practice around the coaching topic, that seems like it could be a really potent complementation to coaching. And so that's what I get excited when I hear you talk about this, you know, like for instance, an AI that would be kind of reminding you of the embodied state that you connected to, inviting you back into that state, kind of prompting questions which take you further into that practice. And yeah, I don't know how that lands for you.
No, absolutely. And I've got a few of us actually who've been sharing. So with our Noah coach, you can send the conversation in PDF format only to yourself, just in terms of safety, so that I'm not emailing it to the wrong people or anything. I send it to myself and then I send it to my coach if I want to send that conversation. And I really like what you said about how we've just sort of inherited this idea that you have these hour conversations whenever and you sit in the room, or it's not necessarily the way it needs to be done. I mean, we've got ones where we're sending each other, I had this conversation today, or half the time the epiphany I have or the insight is not during the day, it's 3 a.m. or something. And so then I've quickly got to have this chat, which I've done. I've then sent it off to my coach, who is my supervisor in the PhD, and she gets it whenever. And then often it's like, you know what, we've got to schedule a call because that raised some really interesting things. And so to me, it makes it a much more dynamic conversation when you need it. And you can use the AI and the human to just bring it all together in a far different way than, as you say, we've got an hour every 2 weeks and you've got to remember what you've got to talk about and what was the issue. And it's sort of, that's not how life and conversations work. Yet we can actually make this work in to me, a far more dynamic way. Again, it's about being creative, and I think everybody's different and everybody can use this differently, but it's a lot of fun if we can get it, if we can get it right.
Yeah.
And just a quick follow-up, and then you know, if you've got a question, Kareem, is the combination of something like this with wearables, so the value, the data, again, everything has like pitfalls, but the, if an AI coach, what do you think about the value of an AI coach kind of having biofeedback, like so it could tell about your heart rate variability, maybe your emotional state. And it could bring that right in. So yeah, you're holding up because some people listen to this audio only. You're holding up now. What is
Yeah.
this?
So this is an emotive. So it just you played to me quite well then. This is an emotive EEG headset. And today my business partner Noah was over, and he has a bald head, which was really, really useful for these things versus having hair. So I said, right, this is going on you. And just in terms of part of having fun and how, part of having a bit of study was to put this on. Now, I haven't analyzed the data because this was only an hour or so ago, but put it on his headset. We actually played a few games with that on, and then also talked about, okay, if you had a coaching session with Noah, just a simple one, what are we going to see in terms of your attention when you have that moment of insight? And I'm keen to know what's the difference in our brainwaves, in our attention, in our motivation when I'm chatting to Noah versus when I'm chatting to a human coach. So I'm playing with it at the moment. It's not necessarily part of the research, but just when you said that, I'm also really interested, and this is where I think I don't want AI coaching to be the only thing. I haven't researched this enough, but it's something that I read. Is it James Nestor who wrote Breath or Breathe? And he talked about, and I want to follow this up, when we're so when I'm on my phone, I'm chatting to an AI coach, I'm breathing shallow, short breaths when I'm on technology, which is like anxiety breathing, versus when I'm talking to a person, especially when I'm talking to a person when we go for a walk and talk. So quite different way in which my body is with a disembodied AI versus with an embodied person. So again, keen to understand that, but keen also so that if we understand it, that I build that into the AI. So the AI coach is able to say, hey, this is great to have a chat. We can actually do this in voice too. How about getting up? It's like me going off to the paddock to have a chat. How about getting up and let's put your earphones in? Let's have an AI coaching conversation on the move, not sitting there on the train or the bus, because potentially that's actually not great for me. So when you talk about the wearables and stuff, yeah, I love all of that idea. I love the technology. What it means, where it means, I'm not sure yet, but I think it's worth exploring because I worry that we all sit down too much. We look down at our phones, we talk to our phones, we text in our phones in a way that's potentially not really helping us, and it's not helping us have the insights that we want. And I think as coaches, when we're having coaching conversations, human coaching conversations, we can learn a lot about that too. And how do I need to get my coachee in the best state that's going to really help them?
Yeah, really interesting what you say about the state in which we converse with AI versus human. And both the capacity for the AI to pick up on that with the wearables, but also that, I'm curious about what that also says about the human relationship in creating, different states in the nervous system versus what an AI creates. I think there's a whole realm of research there, but also equally that capacity for the AI to go, hey, I'm noticing this state, because I've had my own experience with this. With so I do a little morning check-in with an AI. God, that sounds like such a sad thing to say out loud,
Right.
but it's so, I mean, it's powerful, because for 10 minutes I've kind of created this little conversation where it asks me a series of questions around intention, purpose, and a particular experiment I'm working on, which has been really impactful, trying to, eat well during the day. And just that reflection in the morning, I noticed myself staying to my commitment. But recently, just connected back to this idea of other things the AI can spot, that there's a bot that's been created out there that notices your emotional state as well. So it kind of plays back your emotions while you're saying them. So it'll kind of name, feelings of anxiety through to, relaxed and calm. And it's fascinating to have that mirror back to me around the reflection, especially when I'm noticing that, oh, there's an anxiety there, and it gets me to reflect on, so what, when I was saying that, and it sounded very, I'm having a good morning and feeling all right, but this emotional reflection says there's an anxiety in my voice. It makes me jump a little bit, but that jump is a stepping back into myself to check it out. And it's fascinating because it deepens my own inquiry. And then I come back and, to a different state because of that noticing. So yeah, I am fascinated by what that could bring to our own awareness and how we then manage our states and how we show up in the day, as well, and also work through any state that we're in. So it could be very powerful for movement. So yeah, with the realm of well-being, Meg, that's, I know where your PhD research is. Is it with AI as well? So AI and
Yeah.
well-being.
So, yes, and where this is going, who knows at the moment. So it's still fairly early days, but I am looking at that idea of the more that we are talking to AI or any sort of disembodied, the more we're talking to AI and creating a relationship, where the more we're having this relationship with a disembodied AI, how is that affecting good, bad, or otherwise our embodied relationships and just the difference in the way that changes values. We know that where there's been a lot of change in empathy and connection and loneliness and anxiety in terms of society, global society with and technology plays a part in that. And I know it's a big sort of complex system, so we can't blame one thing, but AI has just taken off. And people are talking to it, and they are forming relationships with a replica, an AI coach, or whatever it is. A lot of AI girlfriends out there, a lot of things happening. I just wonder if we're talking like that in a certain way with a certain part of our brain, what's it doing to our human relationships? And once we know that too, how do we make sure that we build AI with that in mind and the human at the center? Because I don't think I think there's a lot of people like me at the table talking about this, but I don't think we're doing enough of that. We're on such a race to create the AI where we might be a bit like social media, missing some of the things that we could have picked up earlier on and helped improve it, guardrail it, all sorts of things. So that's where my current study is, because I think whenever we talk about coaching, AI relationship stuff, well-being, it to me is the sort of endpoint. We're looking at how do we make sure that we help people thrive and flourish in society? And our society now is an AI society. So what are we going to do to make sure we're still at the center of that society?
And so what I'm really hearing there is the big risk to you is this disembodied relationship has the threat of creating disembodied people like social media. But at the same time, what's the potential for that, if we learn and see the impact, what's the potential for actually having that support to be more in society, more in relationship, and therefore building AI with that in mind, that allows more connection, relationship. I'm curious what you're finding about, and I wonder if it is what you've already said about, how you create your AI coaches, but what is it that does help AI support human being and in society and relationship? What are you noticing so far in your research?
As I say, early days, I think what are the things that sort of hits home at the moment this week has been more perhaps in our education of how we use AI. The more conversations I have, the more people are, they're worried about it. They haven't used it. They might have got it to rewrite an email. They might have got it to make a LinkedIn post, or they might have had a chat, but they're not really sure how to get the best out of it. And they've heard about, prompting it and writing prompts, but I don't think that's it. I think that we have an opportunity to be fun, be playful, be innovative, and help people understand how can this AI be beneficial to you. Don't worry about it taking your jobs or doing this or that. How can we actually use this, play with it, and treat it with respect and let it treat us with respect, but just enjoy it. And I'm just finding with a lot of the conversations, people are actually really nervous about it, or have put their head in the sand, or just go, well, look, I've used it, but I don't really know how to use it. And we've got this absolutely incredible tool that we could build to be something that really helps us. And a lot of different AI type technologies are doing wonders for the world and for the planet and for people. We've got an opportunity, but to me, we've got a lot of people who just really don't know where to start because it's overwhelming. So I wonder if there's more that we should be doing just in this education space. And I think what you guys are doing is part of that. It's this, we need more of these sorts of conversations so that people ignite a curiosity just to play with it and do something that they might have thought that they didn't or couldn't or didn't want to.
There's a lot in what you just said, because I do want to go to that question. You said a lot of people are nervous, and is it going to take our jobs? And we could just kind of brush over that, but I do want to come to that. But what I'd love to ask you first is, how would you invite people? Like, what ways would you suggest people could have fun and start engaging with AI? Like, what could be like first steps people would do to, because I'm one of those people really that, I've used it to rewrite emails to help me think a little bit around questions that are important to me. Not much more than that, really. I've done a little bit of talking with Replica, got a little bit freaked out by it. And then so, but yeah, what ways would you suggest that people could start to engage with it and have fun with
Well, clearly, I'll tell you, Joel, to download my
it?
NOA coach, and because it's free to download for a trial. And then, what I ask people to do to have some fun with it is have a conversation. Now, NOA will work differently from like a ChatGPT because it is trained to ask more questions and talk to you in small bits, not long bits of text. But even if you want to use Meta, OpenAI, any Claude, any of those, what I like to do is just not the whole prompting and stuff. I want to have a conversation with it like I would have a conversation with a person. So a bit like I got onto Meta today to say, are you really built just for efficiency or with human in mind? Now I started with a simple question. It said, well, to be honest, I'm built this way. So then I went, okay, well, if I was chatting to Joel about this, my next question would be, well, how ethical is that, mate? So I said exactly that. It came back and really, to me, it's have the conversation that you would with a person and let it go where it goes. It's not to me like if I just go in there and say, oh, can you rewrite this? Well, I could probably do that myself. Anything that's a sort of yes or no, I could do myself. So I want to have a conversation where it surprises me, where it asks me something I haven't thought about, it gives me a question, and just let it take me down a path. And let because to me that's just inspiring. It's just igniting my curiosity. It's the best conversations I've had. That's as I say, the one that I had the other day where I stood in the paddock and I just said, I was asking it about. I think I just started with what is this conversation going to be like when I'm standing in a paddock trying to chat to you? Now it ended with me saying, I have to go, Noah, because there's a baby alpaca chewing at my boot. Now, Noah ended with, "That's fantastic. You really have to go and spend time with that alpaca. Enjoy the day." And I was like, "So have some fun. Just talk to it like it's a person that you really want to have an interesting conversation about whatever's on top of mind that day."
Beautiful. It echoes what Valerie was saying yesterday. She was saying we'd have to engage. So, and I think she was pointing at we have to engage in the conversation, this type of conversation we're having. So, don't just kind of ignore it. Or some people are afraid they just kind of ignore it, pull away. But actively engage with this thing because it's not going away. It's just going to become ubiquitous.
And well, can I add to that? Sorry to interrupt. Engage in a respectful way, like you would other humans, because we are teaching it. In every conversation we have with AI, if we haven't toggled the button off and it's going to machine learning, we're teaching it. And so if it's my child, I'm going to talk to it in a respectful way. I'm going to say, "Thank you, please." I'm going to say to it, "Well, I don't agree with that. What do you think of that?" But I'm going to have a respectful conversation with it. And a couple of us did some experiments, and we said when we showed it respect and had some of these challenging conversations, the stuff that came back was really, really interesting. And again, we're teaching it how to talk to us. I know that's kind of sounds kind of silly, but that's what's happening.
And so I'm just going to follow that because this gets into an interesting area for me of the ethics around how human we train these to become and how and how real we perceive them to be and the value in that and the pitfalls in that. And it seems to be one of the paradoxes inside of this where on the one hand, it seems like the more human it is with us, the more potential it is for it to kind of be a seamless conversation and for it to invite us into our own well-being and an inspiration. But on the other hand, then the more real it starts to seem and the more hooked you get in. And, I think you already named this, Kareem, but Valerie is saying, that a bunch of people recently were grieving when some AI platform changed the avatars, and for some specific reason they changed the avatars and people were upset. They were grieved like someone died, and so to your point of then we go down a path where these things are transforming us, in relationship where we're and they've been built on specific worldview and paradigm and algorithms, and then by us, but then now in relationship to them, they're transforming us and down specific pathways. And yeah, there's some like Kareem said, I got uncomfortable with replica. I had to pull off. What is that in Kareem that made him want to disengage? So yeah, I don't know. There's a lot in what I'm saying, but I'll just let you, yeah.
And I think it's the ultimate ethical dilemma when it comes to this, because we need to know we're talking to an AI. And yes, as you say, we want it to be human-like to have that conversation. But I am concerned that if it is too human-like, then yeah, we're having this relationship that with something that is not a person and potentially taking us away from human connection. The main ethical concern I have for that, if I have this relationship with this AI who I trust now and I like it and it talks to me, if it tells me false news, something different, something about politics, something, and I trust it. I've had this relationship for years with this. I'm potentially going to believe that and make decisions based on my AI assistant or AI coach. Now, I think there's a big ethical issue in that. I know with the when they did ChatGPT brought out their new platform and the voice, and it was sort of, it was like Her, the movie Her, and all of these things, and that is almost against the European guidelines that says don't show that emotion. Don't say that, "Oh, I can see from your face that you look like this," because you're stepping over a imaginary line that could take us down, I think, a path where we're making decisions based on what AI is telling us, not based on a dinner table conversation, a meeting room conversation, a people conversation. So I think there's some, there's some a really big challenges in what's the right balance of wanting to chat to this and making it feel good and right to leading me down a path that we can't come back from.
Just linked to that, just your reflections, because what I'm hearing is some good advice coming up around how to relate to the AI. So on the one hand, play with it, and on the other hand, stay conscious and remember this is a tool, a statistical model that does a really good job of having relationship. But it also opens up the other things, Joel, that you've brought in around ethics, around the motive of the company that's created the AI. What is it doing with my data? Is it, as it's learning, as you say, from the interaction, what else is it capturing about me? And what's the framework on its what that is based on? Again, coming back to what you were saying earlier, it's designed to bring us back in, to be productive, to use it more. And I don't know how much it is, at heart on its value. And again, it probably depends on the model, but how much it really is in service to humanity versus some other purpose to, drive usage and gain, commercial revenue. So, that's the kind of darker side, and we've talked quite a lot about the positive side. I'm wondering where you are, just what your reflections are on some of those darker sides and what we can do to, if we're using it in our coaching as well as with clients that we might have that use AI, what are your thoughts around that?
I think we have to empower people to, again, make the decision, choose your AI coach like you would your human coach. I've always been, as a coach in designing an AI coach, I've said, we don't need a whole lot of data. When people come onto our coach, I don't need to know how old they are and demographic. What do I need to know all of that? I'm not going to ask my client that. So we don't ask for data. As I say, we have a button that you can turn off if you don't want anything even going to machine learning. Our platform has a free trial, but it's not free because you're not the product. We're not using any of your data or information like a lot of other AIs. Anything that you're using for free, remember you're the product. I think that in terms of the data that's being collected, and now all of them have some privacy, they should have good privacy things around them. So I'd be looking at that. I think it goes back to that conversation of if you trust your AI, you're giving them more and more data. Now, it may not be a problem, and it may not be a problem today. I do wonder the more in a year's time, what might AI do with that data that you've given? It may not be doing anything with it now, but it's collecting it. It's keeping it. If you haven't toggled your button off, it's keeping data about you. It may be
Just
safe
really,
today, but is it safe in 12 months? So, yeah, I
yeah.
just go back to saying to people, you're the person here. You're in charge. Be empowered, be educated, and choose your AI coach like you would choose your human coach. Don't just, power something up from, I don't know, one of these free ones and hope that it'll work. It might work, but you might have something else that comes with that.
The other thing you're highlighting there, Meg, just I want to point out, so the individual responsibility, but I'm also hearing the collective responsibility or the organizational responsibility, and check out which organizations you use, ones that have got that the framework of ethics and frame in place. I'm also going one step further, in the coaching profession. I know the EMCC, ICF are looking at what are those ethical conditions, and then it goes further to the AI Act. But I think there's a real huge realm of, how do we make sure we're ethically responsible across all of those levels? But you said something I really want to highlight because it's been something I've been playing with is, who's the product and the choice we make, when we go to free places, that you are the product in those situations and you've got to watch out for that, whereas sometimes you do have to pay in order to get the choice of an ethical, aligned, secure platform. So there was a, whereas, there's a part of me that goes, oh, well, sod it, I'm going to get this for free, but don't recognize the trade I'm making then, where I'm becoming the product and getting something back. So yeah, I think that's a really important point that, we've got to take a responsibility there in choosing the right places. And I love your
And I was going
suggestions.
to say, who's built them? Who's built it too? I know that you're speaking to others who I know who are coaches who've built AI coaches. Well, to me, that makes sense. But if you're using an AI coach that's been built by someone that has never had a coach, again, what are you getting? So, just it's a bit of there's a bit of homework in it, I think, to choose the right tool that's going to help. But that's like, I think all of us in coaching, we've used different tools. I've used emotional intelligence tools, all different tools, but you always do the homework to make sure that the tool I'm using is the right fit for my clients at that time, and it's ethical, it's all of that sort of thing. So I think coaches are smart people. They're going to choose the right thing. It's just a matter of going not getting sucked up in the There's so much noise in AI at the moment. It is hard to me to cut through the noise and find the ones that are doing the right thing.
I'd love to ask you in a moment about what type, how coaches could, what type of coaching will always stay human coaching. But just to follow up on this topic, it seems like of ethics, it seems like this is one of the ways AI is inadvertently going to transform us, is that it's putting us into deep relationship with our relationship to technology, and into deep relationship with what it is to be a human being, and like I think it will start to magnify some of these, issues that have been prevalent in social media, with the algorithms that are focused on harvesting attention that are now starting to. I heard from Valerie, there's legal cases being brought against these companies because it so the ethics of business itself, and what are these companies who are building AI driven by? And like somehow it feels like this is gonna kind of get, that's all just gonna get louder and louder due to the potency of the technology, and may invite us into kind of defining certain charters, like a global AI charters, which are in service to humanity. That's my hope. And then Valerie yesterday said, in the year, like just in over a year, there's been a massive change in the kinds of conversations that are taking place around that give me some hope. So I just wanted to reflect that and just see if that brings up anything for you.
Yes, there was a lot in there. I think, and there's a great website and resource, which is the Center for Humane Technology, and they do some great education and information to help us. But I think what you the what I heard there, which was really interesting, is this: what is the essence of being human? And I think that's a really good human to human coaching conversation when we're coaching with someone who is being really vulnerable and really trying to get to the meaning of what they want. A lot of people that I coach will often just be burnt out or exhausted, and they're not even sure sometimes why the company's given them coaching, but they're so far from ready to work out what they want. And that's where I think an AI coach can't help that person, because they need to sit and be. And they just need to be with someone. I think that's the essence of humanity, that real vulnerability, the true empathy, not the predictive empathy that AI has. And I think a good AI coach could hopefully in the future is also able to see that, hey, I'm not the best thing for you at the moment. You need to connect with a human by the way they're talking, by the way things are coming, because I think there's what a great opportunity there that we then connect with people when they really need it. Because if they're connecting with an AI when they really need a person and the AI is not driving them back to a person, I think that's where we've got it wrong. So that's what I'd say in that let's not use, let's not lose that essence of what humanity is, and let's make sure AI is one of our tools to help thrive and flourish, but it's can't do a lot of those things.
Yeah, and just I'll ask one more question. It seems like this is a time where our modernity's kind of mechanistic worldview and the kind of privilege of the kind of, as we called in a previous podcast, like the pandemic of the solo self, like hyper individualism, that actually what's one of the things that's we're crying out for is like more relationality, more human to human contact, more collaboration and mutually enhancing and rewarding relationships. And so that's, that's another thing that's a lot loud for me. And so so I'm really pleased to hear you talk about that. Yeah, that I think is such a powerful distinction you're offering, that the AI should actually know when to send you back to a human being. And because it seems to me that we grew in relationship, and we were conditioned in relationship. And so actually one of the powerful ways we can reach our full potential is to actually be in relationship again with another human being. And that's where integration can happen, healing, but also where there's another human being can support us to connect to our deepest heart's longing and aliveness and a sense of wholeness and a sense of presence. I think that's another thing we're being invited into, which is the narrow bandwidth with which we've kind of shrunken into, like just our cognitive, rational minds as a way of like operating in the world. And that's again like the thing of like, does AI kind of double down on that? Or like, are we being invited as a species into back into our livingness and our soma and our participatory consciousness, to use Ian McGilchrist's term? So to me, that's where humans will need humans.
And I love that you bring up Ian McGilchrist's work, because I think that's exactly it, isn't it? As he says, our technological world is driving us down a way of attention that is not necessarily the best for us as humans. And I think of younger people and teenagers going down that path. How do we get back to attending in a way that we're looking after each other, we're connected? So yeah, in a perfect world, I would like to think in the future of AI, it doesn't take us down a path that Ian McGilchrist would say was very much left way of attending, but it actually helps us get back to who we are. Will it happen? I'm not sure. Will I be at the table trying to help that happen? Absolutely. And gather as many people as I can at the table with us, and let's see what happens. But I think if AI coaching can help take away a lot of the sort of low-level thinking, the and get us to a place where we really want to connect with people on that deeper level, then AI's done a great job.
Yeah, and just thinking for those listening in, I think Ian McGilchrist's work really reflects what we've been talking about, because he talks about the two hemispheres in the brain and the propensity we have to use the left brain, which is analytic, narrow, logical, rational, which AI is really great at. But his neuroscience research kind of shows there's a right brain that when we access or place our attention on it's embodied, it's holistic, it's engaged, and connected in a different way. I think that there's another thought that I'm having, which is I'm noticing that AI is also pointing to us in the areas where, as human beings, we're falling short of human relationship. But the example that came to mind when you both were talking was this I think it was a podcast on The Guardian, where they talked about a man who got some news about his wife getting cancer, and it was like from the health service, and he immediately went into a bit of shock, but absolutely no support, and then turned to AI and got support. And I was stepping back going, how sad is that? That you had to go to AI and then celebrate how useful that was, because it reminded me of, the fact that we've lost connection with how important that period is, for the person going through the cancer, but also for the relationships around that person, and how much as a society we're, not great at that a lot of the time. I think about my daughter and social media and how that's playing a role of filling in gaps and colluding to create more gaps in connection. But I hope this is a mirror back to us as well, that yes, relationship is important. There are places where we're not doing it great. Maybe with AI, we could get support and help with some of the stuff that is time consuming that can be done through AI. If I go to coaching, booking calls, doing some of the model teaching, et cetera. But then it gives us space, to come back into what's important as human beings in relationship. And what you're standing for, Meg, is holding that bridge of how can AI then say time for the relationship conversation, and that would be a beautiful inclusion in the development of AI chatbots and, the coaches, et cetera, to be able to tune in to, okay, in this moment, this is where, where my addition, stops to your need, and, it might be time to have a relationship with a human being in this moment, given where you're at.
And that goes back to what Joel was talking about too, about wearables or things, or where our phones will tell us how much screen time. If my watch tells me, heart rate variability, something, and that my AI coach says, "Hey, I know you want to have a conversation, but I really think you need to walk around the block or something," because it's aware of us. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but it'll be interesting to explore. I think all of these things need to be explored and tested, and is it good for us or not good for us? So we shouldn't just run down a path without checking in.
There's a kind of model emerging for me around this, God, talking of going down left brain rational thinking, but there's this sense of, I've seen this kind of circle, and not necessarily linear in any way, but this dance between human and AI. But there's kind of almost like trigger points for, okay, actually it's helpful for you to go and read about, I don't know, transactional analysis, or read about AI even. Off you go, here's a great little, training or session you can have with an AI. But there's a circle that comes back to the human, to the conversation, to the learning, to the kind of that, the word used was essence, but to that deep, meaningful conversation. And what's that dance that allows us to then, really, I don't know what the purpose would be other than create a more fulfilling relational society, which we're much more connected, but where AI is in service to that rather than, potentially, when there are other motives around it, can be very much in disservice to that. And that's a huge risk we need to pay attention to.
It'd be a perfect learning tool, isn't it? It's like when I say I want to have these conversations at random times with AI, and I have a great conversation, but then I go, "Oh, that's something I'll bring up, at work tomorrow." But it's a great learning tool, not trying to be too much more.
It's kind of the model you've got with Noah, right? Because you've got some learning, some training. I've had a go with Noah, and there's some content in there around well-being, for example, and you can kind of go through that journey. There's a bit of a conversation opportunity, but what I also sense is this value that's placed on the human relationship as well. So you kind of maybe even starting to model that. What's that dance, and what does it look like in practice?
And that's where, we've had feedback when people using Noah that they said it's great to have the AI coach, but also want some quick activities that's just going to help breathing, whatever they are for well-being. And then we added the ability to have human coaches, because again, what if the company's given them just the AI coach without the ability to say, "Actually need to connect with someone. How do we do this?" So we're now building up a sort of a global database of human coaches too, that people can then reach out to, so that we don't just have a platform that's just AI, and I want to bring some human faces into it as well, and a forum where people can talk and try not to to just divide it. There's AI and there's humans. Hey, we can bring it all together.
Yeah, just one last reflection. See, Joel, you've got a question. I just want to hold the reflection up with the parallel to what Valerie was saying, that potentially this could mean more human coaching, because as people have access to AI, and then therefore the recognition of the points at which it will, raise the need for the human contact, it does feel like there's more opportunities for human coaching as a result, as well, which is what she was saying yesterday, which was interesting to see.
There's a lot more. So I've had a lot more human coaching because of Noah, because what we offer is Noah to, it's scalable. It's $1 a day. It's not going to break the bank. I can give that to everybody. And if people are finding it useful, but they're going, but it's not answer. They're able to put almost forward I really want to speak to a human coach because this is where I'm at. And then we provide shorter human coaching sessions, whether they're the sort of 30-minute ones. But again, just change the model. And so you go in with something that is, $1 a day, to then people saying, okay, well, these people are the people that are finding it valuable, that would like coaching, that perhaps haven't thought about it before. So we have got a lot more human coaching now from an AI coaching business.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was wondering whether now would be a good time to bring in the question from, is it Perplexity that you pull one of those up?
Yeah. So we've got an AI with a question. This one that's really appropriate for where we're at as well. Even yesterday's question was so appropriate. So a bit freaked out by a little bit of synchronicity that happens. But the question here from Perplexity AI to you, Meg, was, so in what ways might human coaches need to shift their mindsets and adapt their approach to complement AI's capabilities? So what's the mindset shifts for us as coaches?
I think we probably have covered this, and I think Joel touched on this. I think the mindset or the paradigm shift is we don't need to keep coaching the way that we're coaching. I still believe that we need human coaching, and there's a huge value for human coaching. But it doesn't have to be the hour every 2 weeks or hour every this or just for executives. I think we can play with it. We can get AI and humans to work in a completely different way. As I said, I've had an AI facilitating team coaching, which was just an awesome thing. There'll be so many things that people that are innovative and playful and creative can come up with ways that we coach better and in a really human way to help people thrive in an environment that is now a tech AI environment. I think the mindset needs to be, we're in this world, so how are we going to play in this world? There's no point us playing in a world that was over here. We're here now. So let's embrace it and let's just change our thinking to what could be possible. And it doesn't exist. It's like I tell my kids, the job you're going to do in 5 years doesn't exist. Coaching as that's going to happen in 5 years, it's not what we're doing now. Now, I don't know what it is. I wish I had the crystal ball. But won't it be fun to see those coaches that embrace this and do things differently and help people thrive? I think there's opportunities here for people who just want to go out and have a bit of fun and see what they can do.
Nice. Yeah. It feels like this is a good place to bring the conversation to a close. And it's been really rich, Meg. I just want to thank you. First of all, I really appreciate what you stand for, the mission you're on. I really resonate with that. And so I'm just so pleased we had this conversation, because it's exactly what we're hoping. We want to invite people into more nuanced thinking around this whole subject, and to think about the possibilities, the ways we can have fun with it and engage, and the considerations, the deeper, the kind of ways we should pause and reflect more deeply before just diving in. So yeah, it's really hit the mark for me. Thanks, Meg.
Yeah, thank you, thank Meg. You. Just what Joel said, I couldn't have said it better.
Thank you. And I'd love to, I guess, take the opportunity that if anybody wants to link in with me. I will be over the next few years doing a lot of research in AI and human well-being, and I know there'll be coaches out there who would just love to be a part of that or hear the research, or certainly I'm looking for people that would be interested in helping me find ways that we can do this well. So if you've got people that are interested, find me on LinkedIn and join the conversation.
Yeah, a shout out for me for that, Meg, because please do, because that's how we contribute to the conversation that needs to happen. So yeah, I hope people do connect and contribute.
Excellent. Thank you very much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
And just let us know where we can find you other than LinkedIn. How can we find out more about Noah and things like that?
So otherwise, Noah Coach, it's noacoach.com. Very simply, noacoach.com, and there's contacts in there and my details and as I say, free trial and I can give people longer free trials because I know if you're somebody like me, you need more than 2 weeks because it takes you 2 weeks to remember to go and log in. So I'm happy to help, but yeah, noacoach.com and Meg Price on LinkedIn with Noah Coach or Noah Coach on LinkedIn. But both for trying out Noah Coach, but also on the research side. It's not just a sales spiel. I really love to chat to people about AI as well.
Fantastic. All right. Thanks, Meg. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training, The Neuroscience of Change. This program reveals the biology of change, showing us what happens in the brain and the body when different coaching techniques are used. You'll learn how to work with the innate pathways of change in all of us so you can create powerful transformation with your clients. Just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by February the 7th. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com. Put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.